out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing. There is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make sense. Hi everyone. Today I introduce you to my new friend, Ingrid. Ingrid and I got to know each other on a transactional analysis course that we are still doing. We are on a quest to better understand the dynamics between the parent, adult and child and the games we all play. Quite an interesting modality to add to our people helping skills. She holds a master's degree in social work, specializing in child protection, hence the name of the episode. She works as a social worker in private practice, and I liked her instantly. I was excited when she agreed to be our guest. If you want to find Ingrid and use her services, find her on Facebook. Just Google Ingrid Nordier and look for her logo, which is the Life Social Services logo. She functions under the Life Social Services name. Getting to know her here, I believe she can make a huge contribution in the helping industry. Please also look out for information on my book, Life Anon, a 12-step guide to life. You can find it by following the link from the right of my homepage, which is www.freddy.org.za. It costs 300 rand without postage. Order from the Life Anon website, which is www.lifeanon.co.za, by clicking on the red Buy Now button at the top of the right page. This is Ingrid's story. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. So Ingrid, welcome to Meet Me in the Field.
Oh, thank you so much, Freddie. I was so excited about this. I couldn't wait. I was counting the days going, you know, if you tell your child, it's like, just 3 meal sloppies or 2 sloppies. I'm going, yes. Oh.
Well, let's hope we don't disappoint. So the first question, and I've had this in my mind from the minute you agreed, was you have an interesting accent. What is
really
what is that?
What accent does it sound like? It's quite kind of making me scared to say, what does it sound like to other people?
It's not Afrikaans. It sounds Dutch or Scandinavian.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting, and that's a compliment to me.
Okay.
Because I'm thinking, I'm going to tell you this in all truth. I am an Afrikaans-speaking Buddha Maisi.
Oh, my word.
So I'm a Buddha Maisi, and then I love English. So I've been reading English since I was like 3 years old.
Okay.
So my dad said I was able to speak English before I could speak proper Afrikaans.
Oh, you are Ferraya.
So, and then when I gave speeches in English in school, I remember my one teacher said, Ingrid, I think you sound American and then between American and Canadian. And then I'm not sure if your accent is going between South African English. And she says, it's very interesting to think that you're actually an Afrikaans person, but you sound English.
So. Well, literally, because when you use the words now, 2 or 3 sloppies, you didn't sound Afrikaans.
Yeah. And you know what happens to me, Freddie, is sometimes I can't find the Afrikaans word. So I'll go to my Afrikaans clients. In English, I would say authentic. They're going, oh, yes. I'm going, I don't know the proper Afrikaans word. And then sometimes my Afrikaans gets an English accent because I'm so used to doing the English thing.
Oh, my word. Oh, my word. Interesting. I always say I get my Afrikanerdom weggespijker because I got involved with an English person for 16 and a half years and hardly ever spoke Afrikaans. So I lost a lot of my Afrikaans identity. And then at some stage he decided that he feels guilty for having taken me away from Afrikanerdom. So he tried to introduce me back into Afrikaans by buying me Afrikaans music. But he bought the biggest trash. This kind of bubblegum Afrikaans crap and I felt too sorry to say to him, this is really, really shit stuff you're buying me.
Oh my word. So you see, he meant well, actually.
He meant really well.
My honesty is completely there. I think if I have to comment on Afrikaans music, I'll go, guys, can't we think of something better than like a song where our socks are popping off because it's fun? It can't, things like that, it doesn't have meaning for me. I'm not interested in such music.
I got stuck with Lorika Raag and Afrikaans music. And I think calling Lorika Raag was Teens Jordan, which I believe passed away yesterday.
Yes, unfortunately. Yeah. Oh my God.
I was a big Teens Jordan fan. But anyway, so where did you grow up?
Wow. All over, Freddie.
Aha. Uh-huh.
We kind of moved around a lot. I think my first 4 or 5 years of primary school, I think we moved around a lot. We stayed all over. One of my clients also asked me, so your last primary school, I'm going, yeah, well, that was in Potch. All right, so that's cool. Oh, I can remember that.
Northwest.
But before that, we were in Warden, then we were in Vryheid, and then we were in Denaisville, and then we were in, what is that other place called? It's like a small little town near Bethlehem. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my word. So was your father a bank manager?
It almost sounds like that.
But all things, when people move around a lot, their father either a bank manager or a headmaster of a school.
You know, my father was, I want to say, the senior, is it like a water management officer or what do you call it? He has the better word for it, but he has the specific term. I call him, he was like a senior water management officer.
Okay.
And it means like he is actually the chief officer, if you can say it like that.
Okay.
So he moved around a lot because we had to go to different towns and different cities where he would do whatever he needs to in his work environment, because he did a lot of things. I don't even know exactly what he did. But then he worked with the farmers a lot. So he had to give them water or they had to apply for water supply to him. So I think that was what he did. He did a lot of investigations for illegal usage of water.
Ah.
Those things were quite interesting. But my father is like me. We get bored easily.
Okay.
So we get used to a place and we go, I know every little road, every sketchy place, every nice place. And I'm bored now. I would like to see something different.
Okay.
So we move around a lot.
Okay. And where are you sitting now?
Well, now I'm in Klerksdorp in North.
Klerksdorp.
Yeah.
The exciting metropolis of Klerksdorp. What the hell are you doing in Klerksdorp?
I moved here, Freddie. I'm actually like, we're staying here now for, if I have to count exactly, we've been here for 5 months now.
Okay. So it's a new.
Me and my husband and my daughter, yes.
Okay. And why Klerksdorp? What brought you to Klerksdorp?
Well, very interesting. We were in Potch for 17 years. Oh my goodness. I couldn't do it anymore. That was my whole, actually, high school life and young adult life was in Potch. And I was just bored. I was bored with the environment, bored with the people. It's a very nice place to stay and it's very nice people, but I got bored. And then I told my husband, you don't maybe want to try and look for another job somewhere else. And then he said, no, he's also bored and he did it. So he found a job in Klerksdorp. He's now a manager at one of the landscaping companies. He does landscaping for a living.
Oh, cool.
And then he's now the manager there, so working really long hours and really hard. And then for me, I said, wow, Klerksdorp. I've never heard about a private social worker in Klerksdorp doing what I want to do with the rest of my life.
Yeah,
I think there's an opportunity. Then I started advertising and I started getting such a positive response going,
oh, wow.
Are you going to start the practice? We need more counselors. We don't have that. And my former working place, FAMSA, we also worked in Klerksdorp like a few times with trauma debriefings and so on. And then we found there was a great need for counseling and services this side because they don't have that. They only have child protection organizations.
Okay. Yeah. I actually have a cousin who lives with her daughter in Klerksdorp. So I've got a family connection to Klerksdorp. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. You see, that's why we found each other.
And that part of the family normally lived around Lichtenburg and Delareyville. Yeah, that's the era that they come from. So, growing up Afrikaans, were you a product of the NG Kerk?
No.
Not?
We were in the AFM church. Yeah.
In the?
AFM. In Afrikaans, it's the AGS.
Ah, Afrikaanse geloofssending. Okay.
It's the Apostolic Faith Mission, yeah.
Okay. Oh, is that the English of it? I've never run into that. Okay, cool. and did the religious teachings resonate with you from an early age? And did you stick with that path? Or how did that go for you?
You know, I've had my own unique run and or my own unique path, actually, with my religion and my spirituality.
Awesome. But that's why we're talking.
I must say, when we were small children, we would be in church every Sunday. And I would sleep through the service, unfortunately, because it was really boring to me. I mean, I was small, didn't have any meaning to me. Mm. And then when I was primary school, it got very serious for me. I was in church, in the choir. I did even solo.
Oh, wow.
I sang a solo piece during Sunday sermons and so on. And I also take part in the dance group that they had.
Oh, wow.
It was that was quite interesting. They taught us hip hop, and I'm not really a big dancer, but I did that. And then I just took on everything. I was in a cell group. I was part of the band. I was part of the drama group. I was part of the dance group. I was part of the actually, it was kind of like, I don't want to say, you know, it was a prophetic group. It was not that. Sure, it's a very difficult description. But what we did is, let me just summarize it in this. We went out and we would pray for random people, like people on the street, or go to a hospital. We would also go to nightclubs and pray for those people.
Okay.
So we would do that. So I was part of this very dynamic group, and it was a very religious group, and the beliefs was just very important. And then I got kind of, you know, high school, almost went into my studies, and I got lost a little bit in my own ways. Let me say it in that word.
I love the giggle before the word ways. There's a story there. I'm reading between the lines.
So my dad was going, what happened? So I started actually drinking a lot, Freddie. I was really interested in experimenting with alcohol and nightclubs. The place I went to pray for, I just visited myself. And then I got lost in that lifestyle. I actually, at some point, I got concerned about myself because I couldn't go without drinking. It was very important for me. And then I got drunk, like, I'd say 4 days of the week. I'd love to be drunk, so...
school varsity days, or where are we
that
now?
That was
Storm in Drangyara.
Let's say matric first year of studies. So it started there, and then my dad at one point sat me down and said, I don't know this person. I'm sure you don't know this person at all, because you used to be so involved in a church, and then you just got lost and you left everything. I said, no, you know what, I think I found myself, actually. I think part of the journey. And I'm not going to take it back. It sounds weird to say this, but I won't change that part of my life because I've learned so much. Mm. And then after that, I found a new, I'm not calling myself, I'm a religious person. I'm not a religious person. I'm spiritual, and I believe in God, and I have a relationship with God. That is important to me. Awesome. I don't feel like I'm part of Christianity, because I think that's labeling something. And my relationship with him is very unique. So I found a new way in approaching this. And when people hear me talk, they'll go, you sound a little bit off the rocker, just a little bit. And I'll go, well, that's who I am. I can't change that. I believe that. Yeah. I live that. I eat that. I sleep that. So that's just who I am. And I think that has journeyed me to where I am today. And I don't want to change that about me.
Awesome. No. So what I'm hearing you saying is that You've done the very organized, the very kind of tight fitting religious outfit. And it's nearly as if you grew out of it
Yes.
And you're now moving around freely in a religious space, and you call it spirituality. Yeah. And that works for you, and you're happy where you are.
Exactly. You know, I heard from one of the other pastors I talked to the other day, and I heard from another colleague and actually, let's say colleague/friend of mine. And she said, she doesn't like calling it Christianity. She calls it, I'm a child of God. And I think that's perfect. That's where I label myself. I think people should move away from their religion. I don't want to say, because if I say this, people's going to, it's going with a lot of scrutiny. But people should stop living according to a religious tradition and rather make it a relationship and a personal journey, because that's freedom, and that's getting to know who you are and finding yourself in whatever belief system you cling to. And I preach it in my practice. I get Muslims, I get people that's part of Buddhism, and I get a lot of different people, but I tell them, I don't believe what you believe. Yeah. I'm a spiritual person. I have a relationship with God. And whatever you believe, I'm not going to force what I believe onto you. You can't force what you believe onto me. But let's respect each other in this different
dynamics. Come from dynamics, the space of respect,
So respect the space, right?
Yeah.
And that, I think, has created a lot of open opportunities for me, because I get a lot of people that's from different religions that says, I'm comfortable with you because you're not a judgmental person.
I got a Muslim male client a while ago. And I was paranoid that he's going to find out that I'm gay.
Oh yeah, and then?
And I was so uncomfortable, and I thought that I'm not showing up authentically in this space. And I know that my personal life actually has nothing to do with my clients, but I'm not feeling authentic in this space. I feel as if I'm hiding something.
Yeah.
And then one day it just popped up. We spoke about his girlfriend's sister who's gay. And he's so comfortable with gay people and bada, bada, bada. And I said, oh, well, I'm glad to hear that because I'm gay as well. And I'm married. And that's awesome. And I felt so good because I felt more authentic in that space. And it just didn't sit comfortably with me to not be okay, to not show up authentically. So did you go to varsity to become a social worker? Or was that one of life's little turns that happened for you?
It is definitely. I think this was a calling. My original plan was I wanted to be a musician because I'm a good singer. I believe I'm a good singer. Other people have told me, I don't think you can sing. But I think I can sing well. Cool. And I wanted to do that. So I can play a little bit of piano, sing mostly, and then some basic guitar playing.
Is that but what you did in the church band, was play piano or was it guitar?
I was a singer in the band.
Oh, cool. Are you the rock chick of the church?
I think I went that way, actually. And then, so that was my first choice. I said, plan A, I want to be a musician. My dad says, I'm not sure what kind of a career you can make out of that.
I can hear that speech. I can just hear that speech.
You know, my father being a boor. So I'm telling you, I don't think there's a career there. I applied to the university, and they said, well, you actually don't qualify. You need to do a overbridging year where you need to get your additional grade 7 and 8 in an instrument.
The same happened to my brother's oldest son. He went to Stellenbosch to study music, and he had to do a bridging year as well. Yeah.
So I told them, you know, I don't know if I'm going to do that. I'm not sure, but I'll ask my dad. And he says, what does that mean? I said, well, it's going to be an extra year of studies. So that's what it's going to be. And he said, well, let's find out what the costs are involved. And then he said, no, you can't afford it. So we had to give that up. So then I went, all right, if I can't do that, I think I'm quite good with traveling. And because we've moved around a lot, I know South Africa a little bit. My dad's quite good with that. I'm going to go for tourism and maybe become like a guide or a tour guide or something like that. And then going there, they said it's a diploma. So my dad said, why go for that if you can go for a degree?
Yeah. Oh, that Afrikaner thing of you have to have a degree. That is,
so I'm going.
That will give you the foundation of a good life, my child. You know, get that degree. Play your pampira.
So I told my dad, all right. Well, then I've always been this person that my friends can come to and talk to, because that happened from school. People would sit in my conversation and say, can I talk to you over lunch, or maybe before we go to Afrikaans period or something, let's just have a talk. And they would come with their problems to me, and I would help them with solutions. So I told my dad, after that dream went floating by again, going, I'd love to be a clinical psychologist. My dad says, oh, I like that. And and he said, yeah, I think we can go for that. So there was like this course at PIC that says it was clinical psychology with recreation. So I'm going, yeah, I think that will suit me well. And then when I applied for that, the PIC says, oh, that's not available anymore. We're not offering this anymore.
Oh, no.
I go, what the hell is happening here? Everything that I'm trying is just not, it's not happening. And then the lady in the office actually told my stepmom, she said, does she love working with people? And she says, yes, she's very, she said, I'm spontaneous and I'm outgoing and I'm talkative and I'm just an open person. And she said, has she considered social work? Social work is actually a good balance between psychology and sociology, and she can use that going forward. And then she gave me the idea of doing social work. Okay. No, Freddie, I had to research this thing because I was not even sure what it was. So I'm going, social work. I'm going for an interview whereby they have to approve me to go for studies in social work. So I'm going to go research. And I memorized that word by word. So when they asked me in the interview, what is social work? I'm going, well, it's the profession where we try to manage people's problems and help them to function optimally. And then they're going, did you memorize the Google definition? And I just broke out laughing, going, I have no clue what I'm going to study. You have to tell me, because that's why I'm coming to you guys. You have to teach me.
That's what happened with me with sociology. So I knew I was going to varsity to study psychology, but I didn't know what my other major subject was going to be. So somebody said to me, do sociology. So I go, okay. And I also had to go onto the internet and find out, or those are days before internet. I can't remember where I actually found out, so what is sociology? And for me, it was where psychology works with individuals, sociology works with groups. And that's how I explained to people what happened.
Exactly.
And I eventually ended up loving sociology far more than psychology. And once you started, what did you feel you were on the right path? Once you started studying?
I did. I loved every bit of it. I actually told my dad and my mom, I'm going to be great at this. I love it because it's like working with, it's person-centered. It's working with people. And then the part that got me a lot was I'm just in love with psychology. I just think that how the human brain functions, why it functions the way it does, and what can go wrong, but what can also go right.
Yeah.
And that just intrigues me so much that I'm at this point in my life where my husband, I feel so sorry for him because he can never watch something on TV, because I'll go to the CI, Criminal Investigation Channel, or I'll go search for interviews with serial killers or something. I'm so intrigued with how it works and in the pathology and
wrong things can go. Did you ever do developmental psychology, I suppose, as part of your studies? You must have.
Yes, whole course.
from before the embryo forms, kind of from the glittering in your father's eye to death, the whole process.
I
remember sitting in that class, constantly being freaked out. How on earth are they normal people on earth? Because the amount of things that can go wrong in that whole process. So how normal babies are born, every single one of us is an absolute miracle.
Exactly. You know, and I think what's amazing about this, Freddie, and this links with when you think about developmental psychology, I'm really open-minded about a lot of things in life. And it sounds also, let's say like this, it goes with a lot of scrutiny as well. Because if you say you're open-minded, people go, what do you believe?
Yeah.
So it's not that you believe different things and you believe weird things, but it's that you You want to understand why people do what they do.
Absolutely.
So I'll go, I can show empathy to a serial killer. I can understand why he did what he did. Maybe there was some sort of a major trauma in his life. And because it usually goes with, what is it, like the front, what do they call it, the front lobe or something like that being damaged.
Cortex.
Yeah, that. They said with damage there, it goes with being a serial killer because you can become like a psychopath.
Yeah.
So I'm going, let's just figure out what's happening in people's lives and linking towards the developmental. I go, if we say a person with bipolar depression is not a good mother, on what grounds are we placing that? Why are we saying that? Because I've had a lot of people that has major depression. They're still very, very, very good parents to their children.
Yeah.
So I actually attended a course from Dr. Ben Garber. He's an attorney, a psychologist, and then he also does placement evaluations in somewhere. I think it's in Massachusetts or something in America. And then he gave a course on the dynamics of the polarized child during divorce.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going, I want to do this. I'm going to do this course. And I did that. And he actually went in so much detail. And it's like he spoke to me. I'm going, oh, Dr. Garber, I want to hug you. And he goes, guys, we need to understand dynamics of people's lives. It's not just what's in the DSM-5. It's not just about that. It's about why, when, how, what is happening.
Yeah.
You need to submerge or emerge yourself in these people's lives and see how they are functioning and make your evaluation according to that.
Step into their shoes. I read an article this morning, and I don't know if you saw it. I think it's Missouri in America is doing, what's today? Today's Thursday. So yesterday, they would have done their first execution in 12 years or something. And the person who was executed actually asked not to be pardoned because he believes that he deserves to die for what he's done. And then I thought, what the hell did he do? So he kidnapped his wife and two daughters and shot the wife in the stomach and watched her bleed out in front of the children over the hours that he took, you know. And I read this. What? See, now that stuff fascinates me because what brought somebody to that point?
Oh, my goodness.
That he could do that and then to fail to connect with some form of compassion for the dying wife. But that stuff really freaks me out and fascinates me at the same time. I want to know what happened. I want to know his story. I want to go and delve in that childhood and find that pain, that trauma, the whatever. And you mentioned that trauma word earlier, because that trauma is my new pluck that I'm on at the moment. I'm doing every trauma course, everything I can learn about trauma. And is that a specific module in social work that you do? Trauma?
Yes, Mark. No. You know what?
Not.
I'm going to tell you this in all honesty, and I think that the university is going to take away my degree if I say this.
I'll beep out the varsity where you studied.
I think what happens is during the studies, we are really... We do a lot of theory and we are prepared in debates and making a standpoint and so on. But I don't think we're really prepared for what we do in practice because I felt like I'm learning more as I'm doing it.
Absolutely.
And I feel like there's a lot of things that I know now that I didn't know after my studies.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I feel that they're focusing on theory a lot. They've not done a lot about trauma, not at all. I had to go and do like short trauma debriefing courses and things like that to understand it quite well. They went into detail about counseling an individual, the process, and not even how to do it, but the process you follow. And they went into detail the group work and community work. And then for me, they actually, the only thing I think they went into detail was bereavement counseling because they gave us like the five steps to follow and so on.
Yeah.
But I think they can do a little bit more regarding trauma, because I think trauma is related to every client you meet. It doesn't matter who it is, where it is, they have some sort of a trauma in their life.
Have you heard of the book It Didn't Start With You by Mark Wolan?
Oh.
Oh, my word. Let me show you the front cover.
Oh, my word.
So I finished this book a few days ago. It Didn't Start With You by Mark Wolan. How inherited family trauma shapes who you are and how to end the cycle.
Oh, my word. I'm intrigued.
Fascinating book. Where he literally looks at intergenerational trauma is how how the trauma of your grandmother you live out, or the potential is that you could carry that trauma, and the scientific backing of that is that when your mother was 5 months old in your grandmother's womb, you were already part of her eggs. The eggs that became you were already in her. So everything your grandmother experienced end up in you.
Wow, that's very interesting. Wow.
Fascinating. So once that thought process literally went in my head, kind of, now, when I speak with my clients, I really try to learn a lot more about their family histories, their everything. Just not from when you were born. What can you tell me about your parents? Everything. What can you tell me about your grandparents? Now, it's an amazing, amazing book. I told my sister to read it. She started reading it and said to me, I can't read it. I said, why not? She said, well, because reading this book to me means that there are no normal people on earth, and I can't go through life believing that, I'm surrounded by abnormal people.
That's just too much to think about.
That's just too much. How can I feel safe in this world?
But you know, that's what I believe also, Freddie. I told my husband the other day, and I've also said this to colleagues. We all carry a little bit of darkness inside of us, and it's just... It depends on what the situation might be, but it can be triggered at any moment, and you can have a psychotic break even if we go that far.
We're all yin and yang. We all balance. We have all parts of the universe inside us. And part of our journey is to decide which parts we're going to nurture, which parts we're going to ignore. And invariably, the ignored parts come and knock very loudly on your door, actually break the bloody door down to be heard and be seen. So at some stage in our lives, we also had to go and acknowledge those parts that we don't want to know exist. And that's part of this journey. So in your work, what do you specialize in? Is it something you specialize in? Is it something that really... that you just fancy, love that specific work?
Well, I can tell you now, I've actually completed my master's degree in child protection.
My word, that's dark.
How do you do that? Well, you know, for me, that's actually something I'm very passionate about. I love child protection because I think that we can still do so much. That's why I want to say something positive about, and I can say that the university really, really went all out on this. Their master's course is just, for me, it was very draining. Believe me, I had difficult moments, but they have a brilliant course. I love every little bit of it. Okay. And I think that they've done enough to teach you a lot.
Oh, cool.
And I just think that South Africa has... And that's according to my professional opinion. It can be different for a lot of people, but South Africa has an ideal environment, brilliant legislative documents, brilliant, I want to say, policies for child protection, but it's not implemented correctly. If we do what the legislative document and the policies prescribe us to do, and if we are trained well enough in this, we will have a very comprehensive child protection system, and children will be kept safe. But unfortunately, we focus a lot on social security and grants and so on, and not on the feasibility of the system, actually. Yeah. We don't do that enough, and the focus is not on that. So I want to really, and I went into child protection because my idea was I want to influence the system. I want to change things.
Awesome.
I don't just want to sit back and say, all right, so according to this section, I'm going to follow the following to, I want to actually be part of the team that says, listen, guys, this is what we are doing, but it's not happening. What are we going to do different? Let's influence the system. Let's change things and create something safer for children.
That's awesome. So that, I really like that. So you mentioned earlier, I think before we started recording, that you want to start a podcast and you want to talk about motivational things. Or did I hear you that you do motivational speaking?
You know what? I do a lot of motivational speaking one-on-one with my clients.
Okay.
Yes, a lot of that I'll do. And I'll show them videos that I agree with that has changed my life. And I have a very interactive and interpersonal, if you can say that, type of sessions. So I allow them to connect with me on another level as well. I am professional. I have my boundaries. They don't know things about my life like, oh, my child's 3 years old and she goes to this school. So that's not what I do with them, but I will tell them, I went through a similar situation and this video has helped me. Maybe we can connect over this. And then I know in our profession, they say that the ethical coaches, you cannot let your client know anything about yourself that is going to be compromising the professional relationship. And it actually creates a limit to the boundaries. And you're not allowed to sit actually and cry with your clients because it's unprofessional according to the ethical code.
I've done that and bugger anybody that tells me that's wrong.
See, I cry with them. I'll sit and cry with them, tell them, I want to show you that I'm a human being just as you are. See? I'm not here to be above you or authority figure in your life. I'm here to be a professional, yes. But I want you to be able to trust me enough to share your personal journey with me. To say, help me with this. Maybe share with me what you've gone through. Because if we relate as humans, then we make changes. That's the difference. That's why, and that's a part of what I said, what I believe. God created us to help each other, to carry the load for each other. Mm. Why would he have called me to do what I'm doing if I can't connect with people on that level?
Yeah.
Because then he'll say, so you are just telling them, oh, that's great. Go figure out the solution. You are part of the solution, you know, facilitating this. So be part of that.
Talk my language. I'm so with you on that. Actually, this friend that I walk in the Newlands Forest with every second Thursday, he's a coach. And he once looked me in the eye and he said, because I can't remember what we're talking about, he said to me, Freddie, the days of talk therapy are done. People don't have the time to figure out their own shit anymore. We need to help them. We need to guide them.
It's very true. You know, you go on this empowering road and I use a lot of other motivational speakers in my therapy sessions because I believe we learn from each other and I'm not all knowing and good at everything that I do.
Yeah.
So that's part of what I want to do. I actually had a friend the other day that I talked to and we talked about the personal thing. So I can't go into detail of that because she confided in me for that. But she actually gave me the idea. She said, oh my word, you have just, why don't you do this podcast like with motivational speeches and things?
Mm.
Because the way you can motivate is just amazing. The way you move someone into a different direction.
Yeah.
And I've had clients tell me that, yes.
And Ingrid, if I may stick my nose into your podcast. Your non-existing podcast. I'm sticking my nose in there already because it's such a bloody big nose. I can't keep it out anyway. I think people also need guidance about what their rights are when it comes to child protection. The amount of people that walk around with warped ideas of what they can't, what their rights are, what their rights aren't. So if you can do the odd episode about that as well, please. You will educate people.
I will. Definitely. So, I love legislation a lot. So I'll definitely do that.
There you go. So unfortunately, we need to wrap this up. But I absolutely love this chat.
thank you so much.
Tell me, if anybody wants to find you and use your professional services, where can they find you? Do you have a website?
Well, unfortunately, not a website yet. I believe I'm too small of a practice to have a website. Because that's a lot of admin as well.
Yeah.
But I do have a Facebook page, but you can search me with my name and my surname. And that is Ingrid Nordia. And then you can look up, you'll see the profile picture is actually my logo, Life Social Services.
Yes.
And then you'll just find me there. And you Befriend me there, and then we'll talk, eh?
I will put a link in the write-up to this podcast. I shall put there so people can find you. Ingrid, this was awesome. I'm so grateful and so happy that we've done this. It was great.
Thank you so much, Fredian.
And well done. And I can't wait to hear the first episode of your podcast. So you better pop it over to me in a link. I'll be watching.
I'll
hold you
so
accountable to it.
And I'll tell them, you were a brilliant coach because you guided me in this. So actually, I'll just tell them that. And thank you for allowing me to tell this story. You know, I think I've said a lot of things that people won't agree with that will go under a lot of scrutiny, but that's me being authentic. That's me saying what I mean and meaning what I'm saying. Yeah.
That's one of the first things I was taught in rehab was, Freddie, everybody's entitled to their opinions. And that literally opened my mind. Oh, yes. Okay. And I don't have to agree with them. And I don't also have to disagree with them. They're entitled to their opinions. They are as unique as I am, and I want to that uniqueness to be acknowledged, and so the same. So should they. So wonderful.
I am happy to have met Ingrid and thoroughly enjoyed our chat. She sounds as if she has found peace in her own skin and is truly comfortable with who she is now. I love people like that. And I wish her loads of clients in her practice. If you want to know more about what I do, please feel free to connect with me on my website, which is www.freddie.org.za, or find me on Facebook at either Meet Me in the Field or Freddie Counselor, or on Twitter at Rensburg Freddie, or Instagram at Freddie Counselor. Remember that Freddie is always spelt with an IE at the end. Thank you for listening. Be safe. Bye.